The school year is just getting started, but it's not too early to start thinking about ways to keep your kids busy next summer. You don't want your child to miss our Cypherpunk summer camp. We are now enrolling all kids ages 7 through 16. Cypherpunk summer camp teaches students how to build their own seed signer, broadcast a transaction using ham radio, run a lightning node, use coin joins, set up a sparrow wallet, and much more. At Cypherpunk summer camp, kids don't just learn how to transact adversarially, we also cover homesteading, rolling your own open source cigarettes, and even martial arts. Hear what parents have to say about Cypherpunk summer camp.
My name is Jeff from Naples, Florida. I send my son to Cypherpunk summer camp because as a macro podcaster, I'm not a technical expert, but I want my son to learn the skills necessary to defeat the feds.
Space is limited, so don't wait. Enroll your child in Cypherpunk summer camp today.
On this week's episode of The Bugle Weekly, credentialed journalists Rod Palmer and Richard Greaser discuss the Israelis' potential to blow up hardware wallets, David Bailey's coverage of the Diddy story, Fed rate cuts showing the economy is fine, and much more. If you are driving while listening to this podcast, make sure to unbuckle your seatbelt and pour yourself a glass of whiskey. This is Kaylee Welch, and you are listening to The Bugle Weekly, the most thermodynamically sound podcast in the world.
We are recording. So what's going on, Rod? How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Welcome back to Bugle Weekly. It's been a really big week. The world was waiting with bated breath on Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve's decision to cut interest rates this week, and they did it. They finally did it. They actually cut 50 basis points just to send a message that the economy is fine. All the times that we're not going to go into boring Federal Reserve details in history, but just know that they don't cut 50 basis points unless things are fine. And in the past, things have always been fine, especially not just Fed rate cuts this week. The war on the northern side of Israel between Israel and Hezbollah has kicked off. It started with exploding pagers and exploding walkie-talkies that the Israelis had planted explosives in after executing a very complex and sophisticated supply chain attack. So yeah, there's war. There's another broadening, increasing conflict in the Middle East, and the economy is fine.
I'm kind of waiting with anticipation to see if the Israelis start blowing up hardware wallets that Hezbollah is using.
So people are excited for the Fed rate cut because this is what BlackRock and all the institutions have been waiting for. This cutting cycle that's going to bring Bitcoin to the moon. And part of, you know, what some people believe could also cause Bitcoin to go to the moon, which we talked about on a recent, last week's podcast, was missiles. They blow you up, or they blow up your hardware wallet, you can no longer sell your Bitcoin. Well, that is just taking that Bitcoin off the market and creating less sell pressure and more juice for NG.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. It's pretty interesting. So, I think Powell, with his rate cut, essentially just said, he broadcast to the world that, one, he's a Bitcoiner and that Bitcoin's already won, right? And then two, you know, it's kind of scary watching what's happening, you know, with the Jews blowing up, you know, people's devices, you know, because they could be, you know, trying to pump their own bags, essentially. They could, like, imagine, you know, if they went and they targeted everybody that they knew was selling Bitcoin and blew up their signing devices to prevent that from happening, how much that could pump the market.
Right, like people would, they would try to, you know, get as far away as possible from their hardware wallets and their signing devices. They wouldn't be tempted to sell even when the price is pumping. And the OTC desks would not be able to source enough Bitcoin. They would run out again.
So, yeah, I mean, what do you think the strategy is here? So, you know, say, like, you're trying to send a transaction, you're trying to refill your hot wallet because you spent all your funds on cigarettes. So you go into your cold wallet solution, you know, to broadcast a transaction, you plug it into your computer, or however you do it, and it essentially just explodes.
Well, you know, you plug it in and you notice that it's getting hot and it starts sizzling like a plate of fajitas at Chili's coming out. And you're like, oh, like this is, you have to unplug it right away. And now you don't know if it's safe to plug back in. You don't know if your secure element has been fried. It's a very anxiety increasing experience.
So, like, if that happens, like, what do? You go and you buy another device with your debit card from a supply chain that, you know, maybe the Israelis infiltrated, or do you use, like, a general purpose signing device, like, or hardware, like a typewriter, or do you, you know, go through the process of setting up a seed signer? Or do you use like an old cell phone? Like what do you think the strategy is here? Cause it seems like, Israelis can blow up any device they want right now.
I think some people will be experimenting with some of these strategies that you just mentioned. I think some people may go as far as just writing down the plain text, key, private key itself, and then letting Bitcoin Core on their laptop, typing it in by hand for every transaction that they broadcast. But, and I think that this news announcement that came out on Friday, right after, you know, the end of the day, the market had closed, people were ready to head out to their weekend, is they want people to just put it back in custody. They want people to go and buy the BlackRock ETF. They want people to buy that Coinbase, and they want people to have it custody by, you know, Wall Street bank like BNY Mellon, which just got approval from the government to self-custody themselves. So people are going to probably outsource it to protect their, you know, security of their life and limb. And move that risk to a BNY Mellon vault that where they're, you know, they're using the Ledger wallet or the cold card on your behalf.
You know, I don't think I'm willing to, so like I have a problem, like I'd be willing to go through the KYC process, you know, but I would only be willing to go through the KYC process if all the employees that have access to my KYC data at, you know, so said financial institution also provide me their own KYC. So I need to know if I'm custodying my Bitcoin with Coinbase, I'd need Brian Armstrong to send me his social security number, a picture of his ID, you know, with his address on it. Like I need to be, you know, certain, and there needs to be that counterbalance of like, if I'm providing, you know, these strangers my ID, then they should be providing me theirs. And I've yet to find an institution. Like, I don't think Swan will do that. I don't think Corey will send me his personal information. I don't think River will do that.
No. And I think when you are talking about, I think you're keying in on the right path, which is people are going to demand a better user experience when it comes to KYC. They want maybe some companies will try to gamify KYC, make it more fun, make it kind of a game, make it be able to earn sats for how fast you can KYC, like they're trying to find the fastest person to get through the KYC process. And you could see, you could see things like that. And I think that where we'll be most innovative and slightly unfair by any technically the Supreme Court has said that corporations are people. So like, you should be able to create an LLC and just KYC to the LLC formed in Delaware. It doesn't disclose who you are or who is a part of the LLC. And you should just be able to, you know, KYC your wallet of Satoshi, your Strike wallet, your Coinbase account, whatever, to this unnamed LLC.
I think one way to gamify KYC a little bit more, a product that I think would be very attractive to most people right now is essentially KYC Russian roulette, where, you know, you have like a 1 in 6 chance as you put your information in that it gets broadcasted on the dark web.
Ooh.
Just instantly.
Yeah. And that would have to find, you know, who stole it and then try to get it back.
I mean, wouldn't that be a lot of fun? Like, you sign up to an exchange and you're like, okay, you got a 1 in 6 chance that it gets leaked all over the internet, and then some Nigerian prince, you know, gets access to all your personal information.
That's horrible. That's already happening now, but they haven't built a fun user experience around that happening. It's like, okay, I get an email or somebody, you know, retweets something good I said about the exchange. It says, you know, this idiot didn't see it coming, but I did. Can't believe this dumbass has to use his Bitcoin on this company's app. It's like, that sucks. I feel stupid. But like, if you could put it and make it like part of the experience so that everybody kind of understands, like, it has nothing to do with your decisions or like your risk management. It's just part of the game.
Yeah. I mean, I think gamifying it and being a little bit more transparent about the risks, and like, I think a lot of people, you know, when they're engaging in the KYC process, like, they understand that they're, you know, living in the Western countries, we're not living in the global South. I assume most of our listeners aren't. We have so much financial privilege here, and you know, when your KYC data gets distributed to a lot of these people in the global South that then go and use it to commit, you know, identity theft or whatever. You know, we're essentially, it's kind of like engaging in a charity like Samaritan's Purse or, you know, something like that, which is dedicating a lot of resources to the global South. You're essentially boosting the economy of these developing countries by allowing them to, you know, take out loans in your name or, you know, whatever else and exploit.
Right. And, you know, at the end of the day, a Supreme Court ruled in a ruling that came out just a few months ago. So this summer, this spring, a company like Coinbase or whoever that you buy Bitcoin from, they are legally protected. Like, it is their right as the property owners of your information, when you KYC with them, to sell that data and to monetize it. So, you know, even if somebody from the global South doesn't hack into the servers and steal it, if they just decided to sell it secretly, you know, they would not be violating any laws, and they don't have to disclose that.
Yeah. And I think we just need to figure out ways to, you know, gamify it and make it more fun. You know, if we're gonna be having our information, you know, used by Abdul and somewhere in the Middle East or, you know, wherever else.
At the very least, let me screenshot like a pre-generated meme of me being like, LOL, just got another email that all my data got leaked on the dark web again. And it's just like, everybody can like that, get engagement on Twitter. It'll make me feel better about the fact that that company was unable to protect my data. Just give me a good user experience. I understand that it's hard being a builder.
Yeah. It would be great is like, these companies could do something essentially. So like, you know, a lot of these charities, like, that you can donate to that buy, you know, kids in the global South food. You know, you can feed them for like $1 a day or whatever it is. They typically send you like stories about like, you know, what the people you're feeding are doing. And in the same way, you know, it's like, okay, you know, Calpassion India, you know, used your personal data to, you know, essentially feed his family through, you know, identity theft and taking out a loan in your name. And yeah, your credit just got wrecked, but like, you know, you want to see like, you know, pictures of Kalpesh's family, you know, his kids eating as a result of it, the new TV they just bought, you know, stuff like that. And I think that would make it much more attractive to sign up for these platforms and these services. Right,
the world of becoming a better place and people in the global South having uplifting lives as a result of your early adoption of Bitcoin is just, it's uplifting news that kind of boosts everybody's spirits.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Kalpesh, you know, could send his child Raj, you know, to the US, you know, with that money to go to college so that he can learn, you know, the skills necessary to, you know, run a successful 7-Eleven chain. And, you know, your identity being stolen, or in this case, donated transparently in order to be able to fund that process.
Right. And he doesn't even have to be a really impactful breach, you know, so to speak. Like, if anybody is familiar with the fat Indonesian baby who went viral a few years ago because he was like 300-pound three-year-old who just chain smoked cigarettes. Well, the cigarettes are expensive, and a three-year-old doesn't have access to low-wage jobs until, you know, he's at least six or seven in a country like Indonesia, and his parents may not be able to afford to buy cigarettes, but you did make that possible.
Yeah, we want children in these global South countries to be able to afford cigarettes for their kids. And, you know, I know in the Western countries, parents are having trouble enough affording to buy their children cigarettes.
Right. But again, to hark back to the point you made, we have a lot of privilege in the United States, and the industrialized West was able to build magnificent, efficient, successful capitalist societies because people, although the workers had access to nicotine to enhance their productivity. And to try to pull that ladder up, once we've built our industrialized society and tell the global South they can't do that, we don't directly tell them that, but we right pull their access to those cigarettes and nicotine products that helped us make it where we are today.
Yeah, I wonder, how do I say this? Yeah, we just need new ways to democratize the distribution of good quality tobacco.
Right, right. It's we've talked about many, many episodes ago about using the blockchain to solve tobacco availability in rural areas in the global South, but there's a lot of ways that this industry can pitch in. In other news this week, it's been a huge week. Donald Trump also went to PubKey and bought burgers at PubKey using his custodial lightning wallet Strike. And this was the first ever Bitcoin transaction by a U.S. president for goods and services that I think any of us are aware of. So that was a very historic event.
What do you think the attitude in Strike's compliance department looked like when they first got his KYC info put in?
You know, it's if you've ever been at your job and your manager comes by and says, "Everybody, the CEO is going to be in today. Dress your best, be on your best behavior." I think that the Strike employees rallied to the, they answered the call. And it's not often that, that Stripe provides good customer service, according to most of their customers. But for the president, they pulled out all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, I mean, it'd probably be a pretty big moment, you know, to see his KYC information come across your, I don't know what that, your KYC dashboard or, you know, whatever they use.
I feel like the, I feel like whoever is reviewing that would probably get that, it, you know, that KYC information more than one time per day and be easily attributed to scammers. So I think that, there must have been something in the KYC form that they had to look up to be like, oh, this, this one isn't a scammer. This is the real Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, I imagine his info at this point is probably Googleable.
I was just going to do a little bit of research here in Stacker News about this very question. And this is just speculation that somebody had a friend who worked at Stripe and said that typically they would get facts from Dennis Porter before a new politician was going to start the KYC process, that to let them know that he orange pilled, you know, Senator so-and-so, and that they should expect that KYC data imminently. And so it kind of gives them a heads up.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there, what this whole, you know, transaction of PubKey, you know, showed is that there's a market for Bitcoin assistance, you know, for high net worth individuals who have done a lot, but, you know, can't be bothered to figure out how to, you know, essentially run their own node and you know, go through that process. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have tried to do, you know, different products like this, you know, where they'll teach you about Bitcoin and you'll pay them, you know, some sort of, you know, fee in order to do it, kind of targeting the high net worth individuals. But, you know, one of the problems that exists is I don't think there's a big enough pool that, you know, have been approved by the Secret Service in order to do that. So there's all these politicians, you know, that need like a whole different level of KYC with, you know, heavy background checks to ensure that they're not, you know, they weren't in a BlackRock commercial and they're not a, you know, a threat to, you know, so-and-so's life. And
so it's, it's kind of like you almost need another agency or government program to segregate compliance away, segregate that responsibility away from the private sector and have, you know, the government doing the compliance and KYC on themselves because they, you know, it's their colleagues, it is their, you know, their friends, their coworkers. They are trained or just know how to, you know, separate the scams from the real, you know, orange-billed federal employees. And,
yeah, something like that. It's, I don't know. I mean, we have a serious problem, which is I don't think there's really a good, convenient, easy way to go and verify who's been a BlackRock commercial or not.
True. I'm thinking about this on the other side is one of the controversies on Bitcoin Twitter when the videos came out of the transaction was that Donald Trump did not actually even hold the phone and do the transaction for himself. It was somebody else doing it for him. So it is like it didn't count as the president even doing it. But I think that like the president of the United States can't be expected to learn how to use Lightning wallets. He's very busy. He's got a lot on his mind. There's a lot of things you can mess up. So I think that's natural. And I think that there's, you know, I would tell my daughter, I would say the opportunity for you to get a really good job as an executive assistant to powerful CEOs, powerful politicians would be to be able to run a node and to know how to use a Lightning wallet. Because those are the skills that these powerful people are going to need, but not have time to learn about themselves. So you can be kind of like their personal assistant, you know, to help them transact adversarially you know, in their professional capacity.
I was genuinely surprised that Donald Trump didn't do the transaction on his own, because I don't think there's anything easier than doing a custodial Lightning transaction. You know what I mean?
I agree, but it's also like, you know, we've all been there. How do you open a PDF on your computer? How do you put in the Wi-Fi password on your laptop? And a lot of our boomer parents and older, it took them years, and a lot of them still haven't figured it out.
Which is, you know, kind of strange. I know I have a lot of technical difficulties on a regular basis and need to, you know, either use Kaylee or my wife to teach me how to use my typewriter properly. But, like, I've been able to do it. And, you know, Donald Trump has shown very clearly that he can use sophisticated websites that are complicated, like Truth Social, like Twitter, to, you know, broadcast his, you know, very rational thoughts to the world.
Right. I'm curious what his NPub is, if he's migrated over there yet.
I doubt. Yeah. If he's over there, you know, he's probably a NIM, like Baron.
Right.
I think Baron's our monster. All right. Well, I wanted to, you know, touch on the Jerome Powell rate cut again real quick. So, you know, I got a question for you, Rod, which is, you know, I think one of the primary reasons why he cut rates is because people are, you know, upset. They're having issues affording to pay taxes right now. It's a real problem. And I want to know, is this rate cut enough to help people to be able to afford taxes? Or, you know, does the Fed need to be a little bit more aggressive in their policies?
I think that they are cognizant of the fact that they have to make big choices, and they have to intervene into markets pretty aggressively to fix the affordability of taxes problem. And that's why they went with the 50 bits. The economy is fine, but consequently, economy that is fine is going to make asset prices inflate, and that's going to make taxes more expensive. It's not certain if it will make the affordability of taxes easier.
So my fear is that the only way that people are going to be able to afford taxes going forward is to actually purchase Bitcoin and save in Bitcoin. And I think that's kind of an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, and that is why a lot of Bitcoiners are not excited about Kamala Harris, because the unrealized gain taxes would be, it would force a lot of people to have to sell Bitcoin to afford to pay their taxes. And it would be potentially very bearish in terms of the possibilities of a big bull market this cycle.
That would be a real issue for Michael Saylor and his managing his brand, because he's king hodl over there, wanting people to never sell their Bitcoin, very anti-selling Bitcoin. But I think it would kind of force him to sell Bitcoin, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that I've read some speculation that his recent podcast that is very controversial and has drawn him a lot of criticism last week was this suggestion that everybody should be able to get about 5% yield from their Bitcoin from the banks on Wall Street, like Morgan Stanley, because he wants to have Bitcoin generate yield so that the government can tax that, and that they'll be satisfied with the revenue they get from the Bitcoin yield, and that they won't have to tax the unrealized gains. But that is, you know, that is, like I said, speculation. We'll have to see how that kind of unfolds.
It's the reason why that, you know, Kamala is wanting to do this. Is there not enough money that the federal government has right now to, to send to Israel in order to, you know, blow up, you know, various wallets? Is that like the thinking of like, okay, how do we get more funding to these guys? And that's why taxes need to go up, even though nobody can afford them.
Yeah, if they can provide the assistance to multiple fronts of, on this war, on these wars that we have, and they can support Mossad's ability to blow up the hardware wallets, that will drive the price up and actually increase the revenue the government will get from unrealized gains on Bitcoin as it keeps going up. And that will kind of create a virtuous cycle of more funding and more tax revenue.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. That's, I don't know what to think about that. I think it's kind of an unfortunate way to go about things.
That's why, I mean, that's why democracy is so important. That's why everybody has to vote, because this could change everything. At least that is what some people believe. That's why there's so much politics on. That's why David Bailey is fighting so far on Trump's team.
Yeah, so you had something in the notes of, that you wanted to talk about that like to hear more of your thoughts on, but it had to do with David Bailey and Diddy.
Yeah, well, it's his tweets. David Bailey's been tweeting a lot recently about the October surprise in politics. The October surprise, as it's known in politics, excuse me, is Diddy. And it's unclear what he's talking about broadly, but it seems to be related to Diddy's connections in the political landscape as it pertains to this election, and that it's going to be, you know, a black eye on a lot of politicians' reputations. And it's, if you're not aware, Diddy was arrested this week as well. He is essentially being accused of the Jay Epstein of hip hop.
Well, I mean, there's something that's really important for our listeners to understand is that, you know, weird sex stuff and pedophilia is like one of the foundations of our democracy that we live in. And that, you know, without those types of activities, you know, being allowed to happen is kind of a danger to our democracy. So like individuals like Jeffrey Epstein and P. Diddy offer a lot of security to our system. They protect the system from, you know, individuals that want to prevent the sending of money to Ukraine and Israel. And it's kind of like an accountability. So like, you know, like if you get trapped into a situation, you know, if you're an elected leader, if you're abusing children, you know, that's like a whole different level of KYC that they have on. They have video evidence of that.
Right. So that is why we need, or, you know, at least I would assume that the government believes that they need a special KYC process for government officials, because they will be making, you know, transactions and spending Bitcoin for things that are necessary for the preservation of democracy that might not be legal or might sound alarms if it were done by a private citizen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you're an elected official or you have a badge, you have special authority to do things that would be considered morally repugnant to the average person, right? So, like, you know, if you and I, you know, as credentialed journalists went and, you know, abused children, it would be, you know, seen as absolutely appalling. And the reason why is because we're not elected officials, right? We don't have the pass. There's not some sort of national security reason, you know, to do that, to hurt these kids or to do stuff like that. And that's why, you know, like privacy technology is really important, you know, but only, you know, explicitly for, you know, the intelligence agencies and, you know, these unelected and elected bureaucrats that have special privileges that average people cannot be afforded and shouldn't be afforded.
Yeah, so that it almost makes me think that what we need is, at least to protect national security, would be that our politicians, after they were KYC'd and got their accounts, that KYC information would be expunged, destroyed, and all associations and ties to their UTXOs would be disconnected. So that way, they would be able to perform the necessary activities and transactions needed for democracy and national security without having that information ever associated to their identity and allowing anybody who's monitoring the blockchain to trace their activities to those accounts.
Well, I mean, it's really important that, you know, the people that determine whether or not a politician is good or bad for a democracy, they have the leverage to force them to be good for our democracy on a regular basis. So, right. Like, I don't think we want the KYC data, you know, completely destroyed, because, like, those are mechanisms used to control these individuals to make sure they don't go too far off kilter.
That's a good point. Yeah. Do you
like the?
How does this tie into the work that that Whitney and Webb and Mark Bidwin have done? Do you think that there's any relationship here between that stuff?
Well, I really appreciate the work that Mark and Whitney have done. You know, I know Whitney is well known for her book A Nation Under Blackmail, which is all about, you know, the mechanisms of how, you know, these you know, different groups of people ensure that everybody participating in our democracy, you know, from like the political standpoint, the people running for office are actually, you know, the ones that are, like, the behavior is controlled enough so that they remain good for our democracy, if that makes sense.
Throughout history, in times of darkness when the shadows threatened to engulf all of humanity, courageous men stood steadfast and tall as unwavering guardians of light. They've defeated the strong, protected the weak, and kept the dream of self-determination alive for their children and future generations. Now, as darkness encroaches once again, a new band of heroes stand prepared to become the beacons of strength and hope that will illuminate humanity's path to a brighter future. And these great men know this path begins with local communities. Communities like the Intellectual Silk Road. With every Bitcoin podcast downloaded, the Intellectual Silk Road grows larger and stronger. Intellectual Silk Road cypherpunks are working tirelessly to build out value-for-value network effects using Noster, Fediments, group chats, and communication syndication relays like Bitcoin podcasts in preparation for the darkness of winter and the fourth turning to arrive. Join the Intellectual Silk Road and help us protect the light of free men, just like the cypherpunks who came before us. We'll be waiting for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they've really documented the mechanisms of which what a lot of this stuff is happening to keep people, you know, properly behaved.
Right, like the people who they report on are the people who have been vetted by long processes in Silicon Valley, Langley, Virginia, you know, El Salvador, wherever Bitfinex is, Franklin Templeton, the CIA, that these people should have control and custody of this special KYC data so that they can keep tabs on the powerful people who interact and control these networks to make sure that they monitor and track and use them the way that they would like them to be used.
Yeah, I mean, what's so great, so I was thinking about this the other day, so the military-industrial complex has figured out, you know, an incredible way to protect their democracy and our economy. So, like, you know, one of the primary jobs of a politician is to boost the economy through, you know, properly using taxes, but also subsidizing their friends' businesses. And so, you know, the politicians and the individuals working in the military industrial complex have become good buddies over the years, right? Very good friends, you know, lots of subsidies thrown at them. You know, and there's this challenge, which is, you know, how do you ensure consistent, you know, business demand in the future? And so, you know, what's happening right now, you know, is they're shipping $10 million missiles over to Israel to be able to blow up the $2,000 missiles that the Yemenis and Hezbollah and Hamas, these various groups are launching. Which, you know, do you look at the amount of spending that's happening? That's absolutely great for the economy, but they need to make sure that there's demand, that they're going to, you know, consistently send $10 million missiles over there, you know, for the next 150 years, potentially. Like, they have a very low time preference when it comes to these types of decisions. And they know that if they allow Israel to go and kill all these, you know, various people in the region that, you know, are a threat to, you know, our greatest ally, their kids are going to be very upset, and they're going to, you know, also want to fire $2,000 missiles at Israel. And so there's just going to be this perpetual demand for boosting our economy, for raising taxes, for, you know, forcing people to find creative ways like buying Bitcoin to afford to raise taxes. And it's a loop that's really beneficial for us all.
It's kind of just when people started to sour on Keynesian economics and weren't sure if that model in economics could succeed in this new era. The future, Bitcoin fixed this. Bitcoin made Keynesian economics, you know, relevant again. It's the yin and the yang. It's the strength of the Austrian economic basis of Bitcoin that is ultimately what comes in and fixes this Keynesian mechanism, so that people who prefer Austrian economics can use Bitcoin, and for people who prefer Keynesian economics can use the dollar. But the people who are getting the richest off of Bitcoin, that ability to pay their taxes keeps the Keynesian system going.
Well, I mean, here's one of the things that, you know, Bitcoin does, which is great for the economy, which is, like, say, you know, the world is growing too peaceful and there's not enough demand for $10 million missiles, and they can't really justify it. You know, the intelligence agencies, you know, whether they're mining Monero on their server farms, or, you know, they're using Bitcoin that they, you know, stole from, you know, some free market activist, they can take those funds and they can fund, you know, the individuals lobbying the $2,000 missiles at Israel directly with Bitcoin. And they don't have to do it by flying pallets of cash, you know, over to these regions. It's a much more, it's much more efficient process for funding ISIS and, you know, these other Hamas and these other groups, that, you know, which then can allow for more stimulus to be put into our local economy,
right,
in the form of producing missiles.
And it used to be that they would fly over these pallets of cash, maybe sometimes gold, for these payments to credential, you know, be compliant terrorists. And then you couldn't always count on the compliant terrorists remaining compliant after that the cash was delivered and the CIA got on their plane and they went back home. And you just kind of had to take that risk and cut your losses if they went rogue. But now they have the ability to target and blow up their hardware wallet if they don't follow through with their promises to do, to do false flags and things like that.
It's pretty incredible to watch Bitcoin fixing the economy. That's for sure.
And yeah, honestly, we need it now more than ever. And it's great that we have this solution when the stakes are higher than they've ever been.
Yeah. Yet another topic on the list, which is progressive Bitcoiners.
It's there was, you know, an ad that they ran on our show a few weeks ago, but it's a growing problem. And you thought this was an interesting story about the gender pay gap. It is a widening issue. It is affecting more people.
Yeah. So there's this like really alarming trend which is happening across, I think, the world, which is, you know, a man will be working at a job, and then they'll, you know, determine that they've been actually a woman their whole lives, and they'll go through the process of transitioning, and they'll, you know, let HR and, you know, all their supervisors and coworkers know their new preferred pronouns. And then all of a sudden they'll get an email saying that they got a 20% wage reduction as a result of their transition.
Right. It's they had, and there was one story I read about where the employee did not even get back to his desk for having the cake at the coming out party, at the transition party, and already had an email letting them know that their pay was going to be commiserate with what the female employees, the rest of them at the company were making. Yep. And this presents a problem for some reasons we covered just a few minutes ago. But more and more high-earning male wagers are beginning to transition, and then that shrinks their salary by 20%. This affects the tax income revenue that the government can make. This impacts the ability of the employee to pay their taxes, and it makes a much more difficult circumstance for everybody. And that is why the progressive Bitcoiners are really campaigning for people in these circumstances to think about Bitcoin, because that solves, you know, one of these unfortunate problems in the American labor system that could impact our ability to continue to have an economy that is fine and instability and peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, it presents even, you know, setbacks for Bitcoin development, because recently Ava Chow, you know, transitioned sometime last year. And, like, I think the community saw that and was like, okay, I can support core devs 20% less financially.
Right.
Now that Ava's a woman.
And it is a problem of incentives that we have to figure out, because these people are making these changes in their life. And then the people that donate to Core Dads, they're seeing an opportunity to cut costs on their Core Dad support and use that those savings to buy more Bitcoin. But it creates a vicious cycle that keeps shrinking and shrinking and shrinking donations. Mm-hmm. And it also, once these people stop taking, or their bodies stop producing as much testosterone, their productivity and their contributions to Bitcoin Core decline. So it's not people think that it is people are donating less money, but it's really a market equilibrium force that is the amount of money that's going to support is becoming in harmony with the productivity coming out of the core contributor core.
That's a really interesting take.
Right.
I know Alex Fetsky's got some thoughts on this. Like, you know, he wants to essentially like ban women from being able to like actually interact with Bitcoin or to even have jobs in general. And so like his perspective on it is, if, you know, these people transition, they become women, they should, you know, be banished to the kitchen to make sandwiches and, you know, clean around the house.
Right.
And I don't think that's a solution.
No, this is kind of the Overton window, it kind of has two extremes. And in Jyn Erso, Margot Pias, she kind of got in trouble for this at Malta Connie Badger, but she was going to give a speech where she was going to kind of explain that Jeff Booth is a communist. And the reason that her reasoning was that Jeff Booth looked at the the future trends in technology, he knew that there was going to be a lot more people transitioning and that there was going to be a lot more women in the workforce, which is going to lower productivity and have a deflationary effect. And for society to thrive and for society to adjust to that, it needed to, the economy needs to be allowed to be deflationary. But the central banks try to co-opt this. On the other end of the spectrum, Svetsky, he's kind of a well-known Malthusian. Anti-Malthusian. He wants to prevent these women from being in the workforce. It will force men to work harder as the men have to support their wife and their kids and their wife who is building a wallet at home to spend their Bitcoin more easily. This will increase productivity. More men working more hours will create productivity. The opposite of Jeff Booth's thesis.
I mean, I think there's two takeaways here, which is one, Bitcoin fixes this, and then two, we can resolve a lot of the conflicts and transitions that are happening as a result of these kind of market inequilibriums being introduced by getting people to smoke more cigarettes. And I think I think women that smoke cigarettes are 20% more productive than women that don't. And so if you are a man and then you transition to a woman and then you are 20% less productive, you can essentially get back to zero by smoking and picking it up.
Right, yeah. The point you made about women being more productive when they smoke, there is a lot of science to prove that. If you've ever been to a strip club, most of the strippers smoke cigarettes. Well, they have to, because they have to, they're going to college, they're getting their college degree, they're raising multiple, kids on their own, and then they still have to work late at night. Smoking cigarettes gets them through the day. It helps them to raise families appropriately. And it's to take that away, would be very harming. And being able to, have Bitcoin makes me affordability of those cigarettes, make sure they have access to them.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of women out there, are essentially, destroying their most valuable assets, which is their looks, because they're going out there, they're eating too many seed oils, they're getting overweight. When you look at the difference between, an individual like Lynn Alden and kind of what we picture to be, the typical overweight, blue-haired HR rep at all these Bitcoin companies, you can see, why Lynn, is paid so well and it has so much demand for her services is because she's smoking hot, and most women are a lot of women, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of women are really struggling to, essentially maintain that because they're not smoking enough. And we all know that smoking, suppresses
day fed.
Yeah, it suppresses your appetite and makes you consume less seed oils. And, most people, they go outside when they smoke, too. So you get more sunlight, you eat less seed oils, you work more productively. It's a nicotine, tobacco specifically, as being the best vehicle to get that nicotine is a very powerful nootropic. It cures COVID. That's been a big issue. You see, if you watch sports ball on TV, you're probably seeing a lot of, COVID-19 vaccination commercials. Pfizer is really pumping in the marketing money right now, to get people vaccinated. You can skip that whole process by just smoking. It's incredible.
Right, and I think maybe the most underappreciated side effect of them smoking is that they, like you said, they have to go outside, and smoke pits are notorious locations for conversations about Bitcoin podcasts, carnivore diets, these different healthy just rabbit holes, right? And so it's more likely that they will be exposed to those conversations and perpetually become orange-pilled as a result.
So, I mean, imagine this. So, like, you know, at the Bugle in our newsroom, you know, we're very progressive in the sense that we allow people to smoke at their desks and they don't have to go outside. But, like, not very many.
But we encourage them to go.
Sure. Yeah. We want people to get as much sunlight as possible. But, you know, it's kind of hard when you're like in an office building and you have to ride an elevator up and down. You know, there's a lot of time wasted in that. But, like for a lot of these companies that are not as progressive as us, like what they should be doing is they should be setting up 24/7 live streams of the smoke pits, just to capture all the high, you know, the very like, what's the word? Luminary conversations that are happening in there, the Bitcoin podcasts that are happening organically, as a result of, you know, people smoking and talking with each other outside in the sunlight. I think that would be a big deal.
Yes. The saying has been, edited and censored by the mainstream, but it's the old saying that sunlight is the best disinfectant. The actual saying is sunlight and cigarettes are the best disinfectant. And it's talking not just about biological disinfectant, but it's a metaphor for disinfecting your mind of the propaganda that's being shoved to it through the screen, you know, at work every day.
100%.
100%. See, there's been people I've seen on Twitter. Arizona and Hoddle posted this recently that he recently called somebody a fiat fuck under his breath at work. And one of his employees covered him and asked him, like, you know, why didn't he say, oh, my Bitcoin Twitter accidentally leaked out in public. And it's more and more, you know, Bitcoiners at fiat mining jobs or getting in trouble with HR for showing their coworkers Bitcoin memes. And this is a result of, you know, it's a fireable offense, depending on the group chat where you got that meme. But it's HRs are trying to censor the sharing of Bitcoin memes in the workplace, but they don't have jurisdiction over those meme shares in a smoke pit. Those are kind of like, you know, zones where that is free association zones.
It's like a based safe space.
Yeah, it's a space like, that HR cannot, you know, hurt you. They cannot damage your career. You can't be canceled by HR.
It's a space that you can go to and you can be safe being based.
Right. Exactly. Safe spaces. We need more based safe spaces. Safe spaces to be based. And it starts the smoke pit, but you can imagine where you can create your own digital based safe spaces. The forefront of that, of course, is group chats where the memes that you share that are too likely to draw negative attention to you or suspend you, get you suspended on the public timeline.
Well, we've been rolling for about an hour. What do you think about going over to the Fountain Boost?
Let's hit the boost.
All right. We had kind of like a lackluster showing as far as boost this week. We didn't even have Miss Hoddlenut boost, and I think that's okay. I mean, I think everybody blew their wad on the previous episode with fundamentals, so I'm not too
right now today as we're recording is technically the first official day of fall, of autumn, the autumnal equinox. A lot of our female listeners have probably at pumpkin patches or drinking pumpkin spice lattes. We hope that you'll be back this week to listen to the show.
Yeah. Well, our first boost for 10,021 sats from our good friend We All Eat says, you big dick swinging bastards, LMFAO, I heard the CEO could make more coins. Y'all have me so scared and ready to comply.
He always has funny comments. I don't necessarily know what he's talking about, but I always laugh.
I'm always baffled on how to respond to We All Eat's Fountain Boost. The CEO can make more coins. Okay, well, let's address I think there's just like, there's too many different ideas that are shared in like a couple sentences. So you have to like break it down one by one. So the first idea that was shared was the CEO of Bitcoin can make more coins. So I addressed this in my Bitcoin improvement proposal that I did of how can we prevent discussion around making more coins, which is implementing the HODL tax. So if we tax the HODLers and pay the miners, there's not going to be any desire to create more coins, because like the only reason why anybody wants to make more coins in the first place is because they think the mining incentives are broken and that the miners need to get paid more.
There needs to be a preemptive hard fork to prevent the only thing that can stop a bad hard fork is a Bitcoin improvement proposal with a good hard fork suggestion.
Yeah. And on top of that, like it's only a matter of time as well before Donald Trump becomes an ally of the Taproot Wizards. He realizes that shilling NFTs on Ethereum and Solana is not the future, and that ordinals are the thing to shill. And you know, when the Donald is pumping ordinals, the fee market's going to go up. So I wouldn't worry too much about the miners. You know, between the HODL tax and Donald Trump's ordinals, it's going to be pretty great.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you for the donation of 10,000 sats, 10,021 sats, excuse me. We all eat. The next boost is 10,000 sats from Fundamentals, friend of the show. In his comment, just a single word, solid. So glad you enjoyed that, Fundamentals.
Yeah. Big shout out to Fundamentals and the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast. Really appreciated him coming on the show. I've been, you know, continuing to work on my,
And shout out to you, not just him, but all the really cool dudes, a lot of members of the Intellectual Silk Road at the Philly meetup.
We should make it out there sometime.
Yeah, we should. We need to go out to sometime with like a Bitcoin John and like the meetup and like whatever they've got, a bunch of stuff going on.
Well, one of the things that I think would be a lot of fun to do at some point is to get a Bugle tour bus, essentially, and drive around the country, you know, visiting all the different meetup spots. And I think that would be a lot of fun. But We gotta raise some sats because we have to outpace our cigarette consumption and all that we're paying Kaylee to produce this podcast. But we'll get there. Next one is from Orange Mart for 5,000 sats, and it's just a heart emoji. I feel kind of bad because I feel like it's been well over a month since I visited the Orange Mart. I think I need to go back.
Yeah, I saw a pretty cool video that the Orange Mart posted. It was they were flying a helicopter around. They were learning to fly helicopters. Helicopters are very difficult to fly. And they were playing Girls on Spaces. And they crashed. They crashed the helicopter, but it looked pretty badass until the crash.
Yeah, that's super cool. They were playing your music in the Orange Mart. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. The next one is from Blizza, 2,000 sats. He says, can't wait for the movie to come out. Talking, of course, about National Treasure 3, Genesis Code. Got a lot of good feedback on that one. Looking forward to seeing somebody make that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great that that movie is coming out. I mean, I was very excited about the trailer. You know, I know last week I said I was kind of skeptical about it, but I went back and listened to the trailer a few more times and I feel a lot more hopeful. And I just think, like, you know, while, you know, the Jews are all hyper focused on, you know, shooting missiles at, you know, other people shooting missiles, you know, and blowing up people's, you know, devices in Lebanon, you know, we need people to come in make good quality movies when Hollywood is so distracted.
Yes. And so absolutely. In to take away their market share, hopefully permanently.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to see the Jews are pretty good at making movies. I want to see them continue to make them. But you know, we need somebody to pick up the slack. You know, they've really been letting us down recently with the stuff they've been making. It's just been trash. And I don't blame them, you know, because they're too, you know, focused on, boosting the American economy.
They're too focused right now on, and we're thankful for it, boosting the American economy and keeping peace in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the only way forward for promoting peace in the Middle East is, by blowing up children in, these other countries. But, right. Anyways, like, be good to have more people, kind of pick up the slack.
Yeah, and apparently, I will say that. Never mind.
All right. Next boost is from Abile for 801 sats. Says, Brother Palmer's reminder that even one sat can be generation of wealth makes me feel so much better about my pittance of a boost. Thank you for covering the stories no one else will. God bless. Well, if one sat could be generational wealth, what is 801 sats?
801 generations of wealth.
It's like 80% of a cigarette today that could be 80 cigarettes in the future or more.
Yeah, that is the power of hard money, of hard deflationary money.
So when do you think we'll hit sat cigarette parity? What year will that happen?
Well, soon. I hope 2025. But if it happens by 2030, that would at least keep me afloat, my retirement afloat, based on my conservative budgeting.
Yeah, I think, like, one thing that we really need on the show is we need more price predictions. It's something that, like, a lot of people in the Bitcoin podcast listener base, find very important to them is lots of price predictions from the podcasters. And so I also agree it is possible to get to sat cigarette parity. I did have a price prediction recently that I put on Twitter, which I think is that Bitcoin can hit 2 trillion USDT per coin in 2025. I think that's totally a possibility that we could be on the verge of the super cycle.
And that would be interesting. Yeah. Some might say bearish, but I think it's still a reasonable prediction. Yeah, it's almost like Price is Right, where it's how close can you get without going over? Because everybody has a tendency to want to go over, but get it down to that, narrow down those guesses.
We're about 60 days out from the first Bitcoin pleb getting elected or selected.
That's not priced in. I don't think that's priced in.
It's not priced in.
The last base we got from a loyal fan, Pies, based of his standard 420 sats. Thank you so much, Pies. And he says, yo, beers, mushrooms, cigarettes, the number two with fingers. Which, oh yeah, man, thanks, Pies.
What do you think the number two with fingers means? There's four of them. So is there like some sort of like secret code that's in this?
Yeah, it's, maybe that's just the fingers holding the cigarettes.
Oh, that would make sense. Beer, mushroom, cigarettes, and fingers holding cigarettes. Appreciate the message.
Those are the essentials.
Yeah. See, that's one of the things that you learn in journalism school is how to decipher cryptic messages like this. And, I know we've been doing some work trying to decipher all of Michael Saylor's cryptic AI picture tweets that a lot of people don't like. I think more people understand the secret messaging than kind of a lot of people expect, because you know those posts get very high engagement, right. Which means, like, you know, there's no reason why somebody would like a tweet if they didn't understand what it means, right?
Right, of course. A picture's worth a thousand words. And Michael Saylor has been on countless podcasts. He has kind of explained the strategy, the thesis, the case for Bitcoin, right? And I think that the people who really understand it deeply, they've listened to every word. But I think a lot of people, he's furnished the message, and he's been able to compress it into much smaller, easily more digestible memes that are just as impactful.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that kind of like wraps up the show. You got any final closing thoughts before we sign off?
Yeah, I do. There's been good feedback about, you know, our episodes with guests, or we're doing interviews, and we'd like to do more of those. We'd like to talk to more people in the community, more members of the Intellectual Silk Road. We don't want to interview just anybody. We want to interview people who kind of get what we're doing and are equipped or prepared to podcast adversarially. So if you think that you are up to snuff, that you can, whether you have credentials or, you're somebody who aspires to these credentials, or you've just listened to so many podcasts that, you know, you have credentials otherwise, hit us up.
Yeah. And there's going to be other opportunities. Like, I know we're going to be doing more live streams. We'll probably do more selection coverage, as we get closer. I don't know if there's going to be any more debates. But that was a good time with Mars and Fundamentals. So there'll definitely be more platforms to be able to engage with us on.
And I guess to summarize what I said earlier about what we're looking for, the quote unquote job requirements would be like, you know, a master's degree in communications or broadcasting, or the equivalent podcasting experience.
And then if you're a woman, you know, and you want to come on the show, you just want to make sure you smoke cigarettes and you're hot.
Exactly. Podcast listening experience is optional there. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would just assume that anybody that would want to come on our show in the first place, you know, by default already listens to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week.
I think that's kind of a given. That's a good assumption.
Yeah. We don't, like, the people that listen to less, they typically, you know, don't understand and appreciate, you know, the level of quality of work that we're doing here. And so they're probably listening to, like, Mr. Obnoxious or, you know, something like that instead.
Right. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Tune in next week, and thank you for your sats.
I know this sounds crazy, like I'm losing my mind, but I swear if you vote for this guy, all will be fine. This time will be different, I promise and swear. This politician gets it, they will be fair. I can look past that, they will do bad things to people. They said something I liked, please don't be sheeple. Get out to vote and get your friends excited. I swear they're telling the truth, we aren't getting gaslighted. I swear this time this politician cares. They see the country wrapped up in despair. Oh, how bright the future can and will be if you vote for this politician that loves me. The system is broken, but let's make it less so. The economy in shambles, but they will help it grow. They will still surveil us and force us to pay taxes. But if you don't vote this way, everything collapses. The key to victory is compromising what you believe. This is the only way to get what you want to achieve. Deny your values, but let your voice be heard. Not agreeing with the propaganda makes you absurd. I swear this time this politician cares. They see the country wrapped up in despair. Oh, how bright the future can and will be if you vote for this politician that loves me. Other guy is worse but wants the same things. Yes, they are owned by corporations pulling the strings, but they said nice stuff that I wanted to hear. I'll vote for them because the TV makes me feel fear. This is democracy, never getting a real choice. But if you don't vote, you don't have a voice, so don't complain if you don't participate. Just comply with the pressure, it's not too late. I know what you think, I'm kind of a cook. But this time is different, we will have luck. After years of abuse, we need a real hero. They said things I like, they aren't a zero. I swear this time this politician cares. They see the country wrapped up in despair. Oh, how bright the future can and will be if you vote for this politician that loves me.
Thanks for tuning into and boosting this week's episode of the Bugle Weekly. We will see you next week.